This week on Potlatch, George Ramos of Yakutat on Tlingit culture and the story of an unscheduled meeting with a grizzly.
Can't afford to fly, but it might as well be the moon, Lord, when you're as broke as I. Here I sit with my head in my hands, watching. Helping hand, mission man warned me that the nights here got cold. When you're cold, there's nothing as welcome as sunshine. When you're dry, nothing is welcome as rain.
music of Waylon Jennings. In March of this year, George Ramos of Yakutat appeared on this year's Festival of Native Arts to tell the audience about Tlingit culture.
Everybody understand me? Actually, I said thank you for coming. In the olden days, the old timers used to say, once you enter the house of a potlatch, the tide has gone out. You are stuck. The doors are closed. You are stuck on the beaches of Yakutat, one of the most beautiful locations in the state. On July 16, 1741, Seaman Berry stood on the deck of his ship, the St. Peter, as the sunrise reflected off the mountain, the second highest mountain in the continent of America. He named it St. Elias. This is where the name comes from, of our dances. The mountain is the highest rising from the sea, 18,008 feet high. Right below is the Malaspina Glacier that is so large it can cover the entire state of Rhode Island. Also, the beach of sand beach of Yakutat stretches for 90 miles and beat anything Hawaii can put out. Some of these are very large wild strawberry fields. The mountains are 11 miles back from the coast, home of one of the world's most active glaciers, the Hubbard Glacier. About Tlingit dancing, you have to know a little of the history in order to understand each of the groups, where it comes from, how it started, what tribe owns the song, how we obtained them. History of our songs and dances go back long before the Russians or the Spaniards came to Alaska, long before the great flood in our history. Some of the larger villages were located in the Yakutat area along the Ankar River, Lost River, Setuk River, and Dry Bay, and Maturia Bay. All of the villages had large community houses. There must have been thousands of people in that area at that time, because in the spring, they used to tell me that when the wind was really calm, the smoke from the community houses used to cover the whole coast, and that's 90 miles of coastline. That was long before smallpox, chickenpox, swine flu, and I guess some other ones they got some terrible names for. Each tribe had their own chief and moved within their own land. The boundaries were from one river to another river, from one mountain to another mountain. The lands were acquired by purchase from another tribe, or they moved into this area before another tribe had ever been there, or by conquest. You had to have permission from the chief to move your tribe across this land. When you moved across there, you abided by his law that he had set for his land. How did an individual get his schooling? From the time your little boy is able to carry water, he was taken from his house and placed with his uncle. His uncle was responsible for training him from the time he was small, trained him physically and mentally. The day for a young boy started early in the morning before the sunrise. At that time, the uncle would get him out of bed and he'd go down to the river and sit in a river. You can imagine, the story told me that sometimes the ice would be flowing by you as you're sitting in this river. My uncle told me sometimes they'd just be completely shaken sitting in that river. After you came up from that river, the uncle got a bunch of alders or willows, and he would whip you across the chest. And they said he used to turn completely red. Why did they do that? It was for training for combat. They believed that any tribe that had the strongest man in their tribe was the one that was going to survive. As the rest of the day was spent on whatever the uncle specialized in, be it hunting, fishing, trapping, and any other things like trade. In the evening was the time to go to classes. After the evening meal, after fire started dying down, the uncle started telling stories. He told the stories of the history of the creation of the world. It is sometimes really funny to sit and listen to these stories. How the raven created our world, the flood, and how he created the moon and stars. And when you compare it with the stories in the Bible and all history, we didn't write it down, we passed it down from my uncle to nephew. How the raven traveled under the sea, how he lived with different animals. We have stories about traveling under the sea, the salmon traveling from our rivers out to grow, to mature and come back, what the hardships the salmon have to go through. These stories were told to us by the raven, and yet the fish biologist took him a long time to find out. He traveled in the stars. His story told us how he traveled. He told us what made the Milky Way long before the white man's book ever came. I'm pretty sure if they look very hard on the moon itself, they'll find his track someplace. The history of your own tribe was told to you. Your father's tribe, where they came from, what land and house they owned, and where these were located. How they acquired this land. Then they also told you of great deeds your tribe has done, and maybe some terrible deeds also. Laws of the land and the tribe, rules that you will conduct your daily living by, respect for all of the different tribes, and who your enemy is and why they are your enemy. Also, what other tribe will come to your aid in time of trouble. All these things in the evening time were passed on to each individual. All animals and things of nature had a spirit. The trees, the ocean, the river, ice, wind, these you never offended. If you did, it may cost you your life or someone close to you. One of the laws is you must always help a wounded animal. This will bring you good luck. If you kill an animal, you had to take care of the body, not waste any part of it, or the spirit will go back into its own land, and you will have a hard time getting another of its kind. Conservation of food and land, fishing. You will not bother any fish while they are at the mouth of the river. You will only take the fish after they have come up the river. Seal, we do use a lot of seal. You will not bother the seal during the times that the pups are born. There are a lot of others. The trees, each tree had a spirit of a good luck charm and were classified in areas by the chief. He said, this area will be used. All the trees in this area will be used for houses. In another area, These trees, the good ones, will be used for canoes. In another area, these trees will be used for wood. Any tree that you cut down, you use all of the branches for wood. That was our conservation law. A lot of these laws, if you violated them, like the fishing and hunting laws, when they caught you, they chopped up your canoe, your spears, and your bow and arrow. That was the law of our land. Conservation and wasting was another one that you were punished for. If you did not utilize the meat, the fish, and the material that you used. Because of its location, Yakutat used to be one of the great trade centers. We traded with the tribes from the north, Cordova area, down to the Canadians, to the land of the Flatheads. I believe that is the Nootka tribe. I remember when I was small, they used to tell me the stories about the Flatheads. It was not until several years ago that I found out a tribe in Canada would bind the front of their head so that it looked flat. And they used to tell us stories about that. But we traded down into that country, and sometimes they traded up into our country. They traveled in the canoes. From the interior of Alaska, Whitehorse area, Tulik Sack, and all of those areas, we traded also down through the Alsak River, the same tribe that used to trade down in the Haines area, the Chilkat area. But our trading was done down the Alsak River. We traded up and down a route there. It bypassed this river, and some of this route is now being used as the Alcan Highway. The way they described it to me was when the boats came into Yakutat Bay, they would stop right in the middle of the bay, and the sails would come down on these big boats, and these people would start their songs, their drummers. They'd start their singing, and they say that the sound of the songs used to fill the whole bay. As I described it last time, say, Achkausik, eh. That means there it is so full, it is stuck in this bay, and there is no room for any more. After they finished their songs, the people on the beach, our tribe, would start singing their welcome songs to them. The same principles was used for the interior Indians as they came down the sand beach, down the Alsak and come up to Yakutat area. As they came up the beach, they would start their songs, and they say you could hear them off for a mile away when they started their song, and the people would all come out on the beach, stand there watching them come, and then start singing the welcome song to them. This is part of how we got the song and the dances. They say that the interior Indians were just a little taller than our coastal Indians. I don't know, I guess the old men really fell in love with them. But they said they were tall and they walked really straight. And I figured that it was due to the pack on their back. From that pack used to come a strap up over their forehead, which had a tendency to hold them straight up. But they always referred to them as taller people than we were, but walked straight. And they used to say that the women were beautiful. I don't know. The first 3 days were spent in dancing and feasting. I guess nowadays you call it having a ball. Each tribe tried to outdo the other one in performance and dancing. Then each man had a trade partner. All through the years, these two gentlemen would trade with each other. They called him Hayakawa, the Yakawa, that his friend. Every year these traders would come down there, he would go to that same house, and he would trade with that individual man. After the 3 days, it was your responsibility to entertain your tradesmen. You can go fishing, you can go hunting, or do whatever you want, but you were responsible for trading him, and you gave him gifts. Anything that you had good in your house was offered to him. Some of the songs we have came down from those trading days. Another custom that we had was for a village tribe to invite another village to to a potluck. The invitation went out a year ahead of time. In this time, you had prepared to gather food, to sing your song, and train with your dancers. At the time the potluck is due, they will send a guide to your area. This guide comes here, and he will guide you over to the village where the potluck is going to be held. It is generally out of, you are generally quartered about a mile or a half mile from the village. And from there, you prepare and go to the village to dance. Yakutat is here in a memory of Harry Bremner Sr., a chief of his tribe that originated in Copper Center. He worked for his people in many areas, an outstanding leader in the A&B organization, and he finished a lot of projects in our community. He was known, best of all though, for his dancing. He loved to dance and was known throughout Southeast Alaska and in all the villages. He danced at conventions, meetings, and potlatches, and a lot of the other communities benefited from his instruction. I was a pupil with him. I studied under him. But one thing he gave you was pride, and some of the things that I have learned from him, I have passed on to other groups. The tradition way we do it, when you go up to the house where the potluck is going to be held, is you sing an outside song. And in this song, you announce to the people inside that you are ready to dance and begin. So now, the St. Elias dancers are here. They are ready to begin. Their dance is for you.
Doc Watson. Here in Alaska, we're used to bear stories, and here's one from Stan Ulrichson in Inuvik, Northwest Territories in Canada.
The bear ran up to me, and I turned around and pushed my hand in his face, and he snapped at my hand and took my glove off, and I began hollering, backed off, about 20 or 25 feet. I was able to make it into stand the trees. And he attacked me again as I reached the trees, bit my foot and shook it a bit, and I started hollering at him again. He backed off again, and I began climbing the tree. And each time I climbed the tree, he would come in and pull me down and back off. And he pulled me out of the tree three times before I finally managed to get up high enough to avoid him. And then he left.
How much time do you think elapsed when you saw the bear, and by the time the bear ran away?
Less than 2 minutes.
What were your initial thoughts when you saw that bear just 40 feet away from you?
Well, I thought it was a dead man. I don't think it would have reacted in any other manner. The bear was charging, and the only thought was to try and get out of his way. I had nothing to protect myself with or anything. The only hope was getting up a tree, getting out of reach of the bear. I would think that it possibly had a cub behind it. It seemed to be looking back over its shoulder each time that it backed off from me when I was hollering, as though it were checking on or worried about something back behind it. And quite likely it was a cub.
So you think that if it wanted to do you in, it could have done so quite easily?
Oh, quite easily. No problem at all. If it had intended on killing me or anything, it would have done that right off the bat.
What sort of injuries did you incur?
Oh, I just got both legs chewed up. Right leg was quite severely chewed up. I don't know how many stitches there in it. It was a matter of about 4.5 hours of stitching.
Our thanks to Judy Collins for that In My Life recording, and for Radio Canada International for The Bear Story. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.